grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Good cold evening, gentlemen. Amongst your inventory, I've been led to believe is a specimen I'm keen to acquire.
When I hear the trumpet sound,
what's your name?
I'm gonna rise right out of the ground.
Django. Then you're exactly the one I'm looking for.
Hey, stop talking to him.
Calm down. I'm simply a customer trying to conduct a transaction.
Last chance, fancy pants.
Oh, very well.
You know what a bounty hunter is?
You kill people, and they give you a reward.
Better they are, bigger the reward.
I need your help. I'm looking for the Brittle Brothers. However, I don't know what they look like, but you do. Don't you?
They caught my wife, and they sold her, but I don't know who to.
That means we visit every plantation until we find them.
Once a final Brittle Brother lies dead in the dust, I agree to give you your freedom.
And I'll take you to rescue your wife.
Where are we going?
Yes! Woo!
Gentlemen, you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
How do you like the bounty hunting business?
Kill white folks and they pay you for it? What's not to like?
I like the way you die, boy.
He is a rambunctious sword, ain't he?
What's your name?
Django.
The D is silent.
Who the fuck gave a goddamn gun?
Oh, no.
There are so many great lines.
Oh, that we will just never say.
Of the shootout. But yeah, I'm sure right there, some people are just like, oh, is he going to? But that line was my line of the movie. Because we are here for a new one. Never seen it. 2012's Django Unchained.
What a film. What a film. I thought you were going to open with, hey, little troublemaker.
Oh, that would have been a good one.
I was going to say, hey, big troublemaker.
Okay, I did not have, there were so many other ones that I had. That was the cleanest one.
Yeah, I thought that would be the safest option. Yeah.
That had fuck and goddamn it in like half of the words are that. I'm like, that's the cleanest. That's the one I could get away with the most. But yes, we're here on the path. Brett and Lucy here. Oscar month continuing. And yeah, this is it for Tarantino. I've seen all of them. Stick around to the end. Yeah, it's you know what?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Never mind. Oh yeah, I've seen that one. You know what? Okay. I haven't seen the Kill Bills. Never mind.
Okay. Never mind.
I haven't seen the Kill Bills. I know we talked about doing those last year, so those two will come back up. I don't know, maybe we'll do like Samurai Month or something along those lines. But I don't know, Tarantino movies. This one was kind of hard to do.
This movie?
Yeah, because it's easier to do movies that suck and that we hate. Like Forrest Gump, I had like 6 pages of notes. We went over 2 hours. Although American Beauty, segue into the Patreon, there you go. Segue to that. The Patreon movie of the month is American Beauty, which was 2 hours and 2 minutes, and our episode was like 1 hour and 55 minutes. So
was it?
Yes. So lately we've been going long. And so this was a 2 hour and 45 minute movie. I am watching the clock. We are not going past 1 hour 45. I will not allow it.
Yeah, I remember a while ago we had a conversation where we were like, we need to cut the episode length down, and it's just gotten progressively worse.
It's just in there. We kind of, you know, go off on it, though. But I think it's all good. I think it's good.
Yeah,
and you know what?
I think it's enjoyable.
If y'all out there don't like it, insert redacted phrase here. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, you could split it up into little bi-weekly episodes
well. That's the good thing about podcasts. You can literally listen whenever you want.
Exactly, the
beauty of them. But all right, stick around to the end of the episode, the very end, as we do next week's Oscar winning. It is the movie, one of the most influential movies to me in regards to history. It is what got me into history.
Really?
It is. So stick around
for that.
Is that
legit?
No, for real. I'm not messing. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. And again, you know what it is.
I've never seen this film.
Okay, but you know the subject matter, right?
I think so.
You know my forte in history.
Yep.
There you go. So it lines up perfectly right there.
There's your tease.
There's your tease, okay? And then at the end, we'll do the tier ranking, all that fun stuff. We started doing reviews. We have two listener reviews that sent in. We'll get there. So email us, podonthepath@gmail.com. Again, shortly reviews of the movie that we're going to do. Questions, comments, suggestions, all that right there. Patreon.com/onthepath. Again, this American Beauty this month, movie we both pretty much enjoyed more than I thought we would. Yeah.
Same.
We did have a question here from listener Lawrence, good patron Lawrence. And he had a question of, if we had to switch places with any characters in this film, who would they be and why? Okay.
Oh my, that's a horrible question for this film.
And we can't pick the same person, all right? And I thought the same thing. Like, he asked him, like, is this a trap? Is he trying to trick us? Because you can't say any white person in this film other than King Schultz. And so I'll tell you who I'm going to pick. And you can get after this. I'm picking King Schultz because, number one, we're in the antebellum, which is pre-Civil War. That's the term for the antebellum South. You'll hear it's the pre-Civil War South, okay? Again, it sucked all around, unless you were literally a rich, like, plantation or slave owner, okay? Just because you were white, and yes, you had that privilege of not being a slave or anything like that, if you were still white and poor, you were still poor. So it was terrible. So at least this guy, he's German in a land, sounds exquisite, and, you know, before the whole Nazis and all that stuff, so it's a little different for Germans in there. Tons. There's a huge, massive German population in Texas, I should say. I didn't finish that in there. Texas has a lot of it in there. It's where this starts out. So there, you know, he seems like he's got some money. He seems got some things to do. He was a dentist before. Gets to go around. He's a bounty hunter. I think it's clear he's like the only person in this movie that I'd remotely want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. There's really no other option.
Are you going to pick Calvin Candy?
No.
Okay. All right. Can you think of anybody?
I don't want to be any of the white characters.
But I don't want to be, and this, again, with this, is, I don't want to be any of the black characters, obviously, because you're probably a slave.
Yeah, and they have a really horrible time.
Yes, slavery was bad. Slavery, I don't know how many people. Yeah, I don't know.
I heard about this. It was bad.
I don't know if anybody realized that before watching this movie. Slavery was not good. Okay, I'm going to go out on that limb. All right, I'm going to take that heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Slavery, not a fan.
No, I didn't like it either, especially after this film. And so ridiculous to say that. I'm trying to think if there's anyone that was like in a bar that was just, you know, minding their own business.
You have to be
involved.
A sheriff. That one sheriff at Daughtry was okay. Oh, I'm sorry, the marshal, not the sheriff.
The
sheriff who was
the
bandit. The
marshal. Actually, you're right.
But
even though he was trying
lawman.
To do his job.
Yeah, he's a lawman, but it's an old West lawman.
What about I would be the child whose father got shot in front of him.
Okay, that's the that's the best white person in this.
Yes,
the child,
and hopefully he just doesn't turn to a life of crime or anything like that after going through that traumatic event.
What do you think he's going to do? His dad's fucking dead.
Yeah.
Then they had to go get the body.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, sorry, kid, crying over your dead dad. We shot him. We're not going to go take his body to go get money for it. So we'll see you in about 20 years, Red Dead style, when you come find
what's gonna happen.
When you come find us on the lake. And we're going to bring up Red Dead a lot. All right, so thank you, Lawrence, right there for sending that question again. Anybody send any questions in, something like that, we'll answer it real quickly. Again, podonthepath@gmail.com. Also, rates and review. Wherever you get this, it really helps. Okay, let's get going here. Guessing the gross.
Oh,
all
wow.
Right. 2012, this came in at an even $100 million budget.
Wow, okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah. Lots of fake blood.
Lots of fake blood, obviously just the locations of it. I think he had, was it like 60mm, some kind of millimeter thing here. I know Hateful Eight, he did that too. And there was also, I saw 50 minutes shot that was not put in.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, so this could be put to 4 hours. I saw where he thought about making like a mini series and putting it in like 4 episodes.
I was actually thinking that like now, if this was ever to be remade, it would be an amazing series.
Yeah.
Because you could have so much more time with them, just them doing little side quests, like Mandalorian style bounty hunters, and that would be so much fun.
There was a lot. Man, here's the thing though. Love Tarantino. Fucking love it. There isn't a movie that I've seen of his that I would say is bad, but man, if he is not into Martin Scorsese mode here, where there's a lot of fluff, I'm sorry. 2 hours and 45 minutes, On the other hand, with Inglourious Basterds, man, there's really not a lot in there that I would say take out. But this, there is so many just minor little scenes. The one that comes to mind is when in the wintertime, right before they get the title card and going to Mississippi, when they turn those bodies into that random like sheriff, he's like, all right, come in and have some coffee. That was for nothing. That was absolutely pointless, except to get that picturesque, like amazing looking scene right there. Maybe that was a call out to a previous movie from like the 60s or 70s. Maybe that actor was, I didn't see.
But there was an actor in this that was in the original Django film who had a cameo. So I don't know who he was, though.
I know. And we'll get there. We'll get that in time. Yeah, because it has to do with his name. You know, fuck it. We'll just say it right now. We don't care. At the bar, when after the Mandingo fight, when the guy goes, what's your name? And he goes, Django. The D is silent. And he goes, you know how to spell it? And the guy goes, I know. That's him.
Oh, of course it is.
Nero. I got it written down somewhere in there. Something Nero was his name. And yeah, he's like, okay. I know. And then walks away. It's like, that's a weird scene. Oh, that's why.
That's why. Okay, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of fluff, but I enjoyed all of it. Yep.
Budget $100 million.
Sorry. I'm going to say this was a super, super duper success. And last time I said I was going to go crazy and I undershot it. So I'm going to go crazy, crazy and say 500 mil.
500 million, you overshot it just a little. Fuck. It was 426.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
Which to this day is his highest grossing movie.
It's his one? Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It made more than even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yep. I think the only one that really wasn't that big lately, like post Kill Bill, was Hateful Eight.
Yeah, it didn't. I have no idea what the vibe is of that. Like, I never heard much hype around it.
The thing is, that script got leaked, and this was when I was like really getting into like screenwriting. So I printed off that whole thing. I was coaching college at the time, and it leaked. I was like, holy shit. And I had nothing to do because like practice was going on and I can't on the floor coach. I went and printed out that 180 pages or whatever and sat in my office, not doing film, but reading the scripts. And
amazing.
Because it got leaked, Tarantino got pissed and was like, I'm not doing the movie anymore. I'm not doing the movie. And it kind of sat a little bit. He did like a live reading or performing of it and then decided to make it. But in perfect, like the book was better fashion. I thought the script was a lot better than I thought the movie was. I love Westerns, but it took place all in a cabin. I did not care for it really that much at all.
Yeah. I feel like I should try and watch a few more of his films because all I've seen is Inglourious Basterds and Django.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood kind of follows the same thing. It's pretty good. Again, especially if you know about like the 60s, 70s, you know, it's pretty good. But to me, like these two are the top by far to me for him.
Mm-hmm.
Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, you know, different vibes though.
Totally different. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the tomato meter.
Yes. Yes. So this is what the critics have to say about this film. Bold, bloody, and stylistically daring, Django Unchained is another incendiary masterpiece from Quentin Tarantino.
All right. So I always overshoot this. And lately, everything has been high 80s. And I've always guessed in the 90s, okay? And Tarantino is not for everybody. And I do remember, and even looking up here, there was a problem a lot of people had with this, including someone like Spike Lee, because of the use of the N-word, like 100 times by a white director. And then just always the gratuitous violence. Like some people just don't care for Tarantino because of it. The aesthetization or whatever the word is, aesthetic of it. And so I'm going to go for the high 80s. Because even though I think it's like the low 90s, I'm going to say 85.
Oh,
God damn it. Don't say 86.
Oh, it's 87.
Fuck.
So close. So close.
God, I'm dancing. Yeah. I'm dancing.
You're so close to getting it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see the
audience. Yes. So there's 250,000 ratings at least from the audience on Django.
All right. So it's usually been lower than what? Oh, no, it's been higher. I think it might be lower because again, I do think a lot of people just might be turned off by this. I'm going to say 83.
83. Okay. Yeah. It's 92.
Fuck me. I should have gone with that first because that's. I think American Beauty was that.
Yes,
it was
actually,
like it was
you're
high
right.
80s
it was
to low
similar.
90s. I did the same thing.
When I was typing it out, because I had copied and pasted my script from last week, I only had to change like one number on each. They were very, very similar scores to American Beauty.
Well, I learned my lesson on the critics, but not the audience. I should have gone with my gut and gone low 90s. Okay. All right. So let's get into Django. And it, like we said before, it's Oscar month. So this one, Best Supporting Actor for Christoph Waltz. And what was the other one?
Best Original Screenplay for Mr. Tarantino.
Best Original Screenplay for Tarantino. And as good as Christoph Waltz is in this, and I love him, he's playing Hans Landa. Again, this is a Hans Landa performance from Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, is that Inglourious Basterds?
Okay. Yes, and especially early in the film, he's kind of sitting down and he's still almost, I know he's playing a German guy, the same thing, but he still kind of has the same intonation of his voice.
Okay.
He's kind of moving things around. Like, I don't know, he's great, but he already got a fucking Oscar for that. He's still Tarantino. He's still playing this, I don't know. Like, I don't know who else won it that year, but it's just like, I don't know. To me, it's he didn't need a fucking second Oscar for a second Tarantino movie where he's kind of doing the same thing.
I need to rewatch Inglourious Basterds then, because it's one of those that I've seen once, like probably close to when it released. I think it released in 2009. Yeah, so I was really too young to probably enjoy it fully anyway. But yeah, now that you mention it, I do kind of remember his character being a bit of a similar vibe.
It was very much, it's just, obviously he's playing a Nazi and he's playing like a good guy here. So I don't know if that was what the Academy just was like, oh my God.
Let's give him one for the not Nazi character.
But at the same fucking time, like, and again, I know Tarantino isn't everybody's cup of tea. And it's so basic, like, to say it. But God damn, the dude is special. Like, he is, his dialogue is special, the way it's shot, what he gets out of the actors. And it's captivating more than almost anything. Because we talked about that I had to break this up. I saw the 2 hours and 45 minutes. I was like, shit, I have to watch an hour of it on Sunday. And then, oh no, I had a school event Monday night. So I was like, fuck, I have to watch it like on a treadmill. And of course, I'm on the treadmill and I'm like, okay, I can watch about 45 minutes of it. That'll leave me an hour. I can do that when I get home. I stayed on that fucking treadmill for the hour and a half.
Did you? Oh,
an hour and a half, over 5 miles just walking because I couldn't fucking turn it off. It's just so good. And you just lose track of time. In what he gets out of the actors from his dialogue.
Yeah, that's it. And I think usually I'm quite turned off by super long movies. And especially when you say there is a lot of like fluff in some of the scenes, like it's not necessary, but it's so good. And I couldn't think of a scene that I would want to remove from the film. Like if someone was like, make this film 2 hours.
Yeah,
I'm going to struggle to cut out or even make it like 2 hours, 15 minutes, you know, cut out 30 minutes. I wouldn't want to because I really enjoyed all of the other stuff because it was so nice to look at or just them talking. One of my favorite scenes is when Schultz is just telling the story of the German folklore or whatever to
Brunhilde.
About Brunhilde. I loved that. And it was just so simple, just them two. And the way that Jamie Foxx just sat up and looked at him like a child waiting for a little story to be told. I just loved it so much. But there's just so much nice stuff like that in the film that's not necessarily needed, but it is what makes it really good.
Yeah, just the little, the short ones that I mentioned before, like where they just ride and turn it in like that. That was just, that offered anything. This did win a Razzie, though. This did win a Razzie.
No.
It won a Razzie for Worst Australian Accent.
Oh, that's deserved.
To Quentin Tarantino. That's a joke. There isn't one, but
oh, what the fuck?
Oh my God. Because again, I know you told me that this movie had like multiple endings, it seemed like. When they get to that scene when the Aussies show up, then I'm like, oh shit, there's Tarantino. He, you know, he's pretty much, I think, in almost all of his movies. When he's dropping this accent, what the fuck was he thinking?
And why? Why are there Australians? Is that there's some kind of historical significance to this? Like why there would be Australians bopping about?
It was just two of them. And then one of them was Tarantino. So I don't know. Honestly, I think to be funny, the Australian accent is funny. And they're just goofy kind of slavers in that sense. Mm-hmm. But that's what I want to know. It's just Tarantino, what are you doing? Like he had to know that accent was bad. He was probably trying to do it bad. Did he just really want to do an Australian accent on film?
I mean, that's a great question. Maybe someone's asked him that before.
Maybe. I couldn't find it.
Did someone ask him that?
I don't know. If we ever talk to him, that's the first thing I'll ask. Instead of anything of that, I've been like, so in Django Unchained, you gave yourself an Australian accent. Why?
Would you like to elaborate on that further?
Yeah, then I hope he just
probably
launches
be like, no.
Yeah, he's like, no, mate. All right. This debuted At number two, I don't believe this was ever a number one movie. On its opening day, it was number two. It's Christmas Day, behind Les Misérables.
Wow. Okay.
And then for the week, it was number two behind not Australia, but New Zealand's Peter Jackson's The Hobbit.
Okay. That makes sense. That's a tough crowd, tough week.
That is, but again, it's just funny though that The Hobbit beat this. The Hobbit. Yeah. All right. So one big thing to get into here, the lead, Jamie Foxx. What do you think about Jamie Foxx?
Jamie Foxx is probably the coolest person ever.
All right. So now that you say that, it leads right into this. Jamie Foxx told this story to Howard Stern, and he said it was on like his first day. All right. Now he's talking about Tarantino. All right. He was like, do not fuck my film up. Foxx continued, on the first day of rehearsal, I'm reading my lines, and he kind of like hums, I guess. He said, cut, close the door, and was like, what the fuck was that? And I said, what do you mean? He said, I knew I was going to have this problem. Listen, all this shit, you have to be a fucking slave. He's a slave. He's not cool. He's a fucking slave. He doesn't know how to read. You come in with your fucking Louis Vuitton bag and your fucking Range Rover, and you're just like, I'm so fucking cool. Well, you're not Jim Brown. He's a fucking slave, and then he becomes the hero. But lose that shit first.
And you know what? One of my favorite things in this film is the journey we see Django go on from this really timid, you know,
beaten down slave.
He is just a shell of a man, and he becomes a super confident, cocky, free man. And that's one of the best things about the whole film. So I get where he was coming from.
He's almost like too cool. And that's just Jamie Foxx. Like Jamie Foxx, it's going to be hard for that dude not to be so fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. So when they give him the haircut and give him the sunglasses, I'm like, this is not of the time.
The sunglasses, oh my God. I looked at a movie poster with them on and I'm like, that can't be fucking it. And then another poster didn't have the sunglasses. And then the movie he has them, I'm just like, oh. And the way that he's got his like little beard and his little like on his chin, it's like, fuck, I need to get mine like that. I like that it points out because I try to get mine to a little point, but his is like out.
Yes.
And the way his face is angled, I'm like, God damn, I need to do that. So that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to try to get that finagled in there to get that out in my Django style.
Yeah, I loved it so much. Yeah. Love it.
Jamie Foxx from?
Oh, so many films we've talked about.
No, I mean, where's he from? Like location?
Oh, Texas.
Terrell, Texas, just east of Dallas. I forgot to mention, I've got my beer because they kept bringing up beer in here.
Yeah. Revolver
Brewing Texas Ale Blood and Honey.
Oh,
yeah, I think it's
nice.
Yeah, I think it's Granberry. Yep, made in Granberry, Texas up there, but it's got the little shooter. So I'm like, this is a perfect beer for Django right here.
I've got a green tea. No, sorry, peppermint tea.
Yeah, before I forget it, because I didn't write it down, another great line is at the very end when Steven, Sam Jackson's character, is like, I count six bullets in. And then he pulls out, I count two guns. And
amazing.
Like, oh, that was so good. That was so perfect. Okay. All right. So let's get into the movie here. Okay. Before we shall say this, Will Smith turned down this role. Will Smith.
I'm so glad.
I don't know. I think he could have pulled it off.
And he probably would have made some cool music for it too. I know Jamie Foxx is a musician, but he probably would have done a dance number. Shark Tale.
But that's the thing. I look at it and I'm like, because Will Smith turned this down. And I know now we know with the post Oscars and he actually got his thing in there. We know how kind of crazy or whatever diva he is. But he turned it down because it was not the lead. And I'm like, you fucking egomaniac. Wow. DiCaprio takes.
Wait, which role? What did he get offered?
Django. He turned down Django.
He is the lead.
Not really. Like, there really isn't a lead in the movie.
Yeah,
it's literally the name. But you're right. It's not the lead because the lead is kind of Christoph Waltz. But I think he
won supporting actor
because he probably wasn't going to win best actor. A lot of times they'll do that. And you can easily say in here who it was. And I don't know. Maybe they did put Jamie Foxx fourth as a lead. I don't know. But you're right. Like, it's just kind of weird that it was. I don't know. It's kind of weird that he didn't take it in that sense there. But I think he could have. I think he really could have pulled it off because in a weird way, Jamie Foxx is just. he's almost too cool, and he's almost too, he's has too much gusto, if you will. He's way too confrontational. I know King talks about it. I'm like, the way this dude's talking, I don't care that he's a free man in here. I don't think these dudes are going to let this dude talk to him like this.
No, no, I didn't. I don't think they would allow anyone to talk to them like that. He was being extremely rude.
Extreme. And just the stuff he said, I don't know. But again, I'm nitpicking there. It's just that's another big role that Will Smith has turned down because he gets offered everything because he's Will fucking Smith.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I think he probably could have done it, but I'm just obsessed with Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, no, he was something else in there. All right, so we start the movie 1858. Now, here's the thing. This is what I love about a movie like this. If you want to make a historical movie, you make it ahistorical here. You don't use historical names, and so you're not trying to tell a historical tale. So I promise y'all, I promise, I'm not going to be well actually-ing about history in this movie, but... But
okay.
I have to do this. 1858 is what we get on the title card, right? 2 years before the Civil War. Civil War started in 1861. So I'm just going to say that. It should have been 3 years. I don't know why they do this. Like, I don't know how they mess this up. Like, somebody should have been like, your Civil War started in 1861. Oh, okay. But 3 years.
Okay.
I don't understand why.
That is weird, isn't it?
It's just so needless. Like, unless he's just trying to annoy people, podcasts. He's
trying to clickbait people, yeah.
Maybe, but it's just weird that they do it. And before you pedants come in and go, well, technically 2 years is still before the Civil War. Da, da, da. You know what we fucking mean. All right. Somewhere in Texas. Yay.
Yay. We're in Texas.
Yeah, we're in Texas. And the slave drivers are here. No.
No, we don't like them.
And that's another thing, too.
These two guys are the worst.
Like, Texas was fucking brutal because it wasn't the deep South like we see Mississippi and known for, like, plantations and whatnot. Texas had, like, per capita or per, like, white person, like, almost more than any slaves outside of, like, Mississippi, Alabama. It was terrible. And again, the Texas Revolution that was fought. We all love Texas and we wave our Texas flags. Fucking Texas Revolution fought, again, 25 years before the Civil War, was largely because of fucking slaves. Because Mexico was like, yeah, slavery's abolished. And Texas was like, no. And so a big reason of that was fucking slavery. So again, we can talk about this history. We can admit it. Let's not hide it in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's not to ever take away that Texas kind of dodged what a lot of the Deep South had. But we see these slave drivers coming in, and then Christoph Waltz rides up as King Schultz, and I could not get over this tooth, this bouncy springy tooth.
Oh, yeah, on the spring. I love that. I love it so much. I don't know why. It just seems so out of place.
So
it's like, doing, 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 doing.
Yeah, as he's pulling up in this little stagecoach, I'm like, is this a snake oil salesman from like 1880? Yeah, and this is not a Western per se, too. I kept calling this a Western, and it's like, no. And Tarantino actually said he wanted to call this a Southern because even though it's old, that's not the old Western, anything like that. And they have the cowboy hats, and they have the ponchos and whatnot. A Western is going to be post-Civil War. That's going to be like late 1860s, maybe 1870 through like the 1890s. Yeah, because it's about the West, a Western. This isn't the West. This is the Deep South in there.
I saw somewhere on Wikipedia that it said it was technically a spaghetti Western. I'm not sure what that means.
This is an ode. This is Tarantino's ode to spaghetti Westerns. All right. All these Westerns in the 60s, Good, Bad, and the Ugly, that we all know in that sense, they're called spaghetti Westerns because they were filmed and made by Italians.
Oh,
like literally that's what it's called. Sergio Leone, a guy who
that's
would...
That's why it's called spaghetti. That's so stupid.
Yeah, so Sergio Leone, actually the guy who scored Good, Bad, and the Ugly, so all that legendary Italian guy, did all the 60s, 70s. He was upset at Tarantino for this movie, saying he used some of his music, blah, blah, blah. Oh. And then he ended up doing The Hateful Eight, working with Tarantino, and won an Oscar.
Oh, well, there you go.
And then died.
Oh.
But he won the final Oscar. Hateful Eight, as much as I don't care for in the sense of these, the Hateful Eight score, just hearing Errico Morricone, again, fucking Good, Bad, and the Ugly, all those, and no Man with No Fistful of Dollars trilogy, that's what it is. I was like, wait, what? For a few dollars more, Fistful of Dollars trilogy, that is. Man with No Name trilogy, all that there. Or Man with No Name. With all those three were called in there. Absolutely incredible. So for Hateful Eight, definitely the score. And so, yeah, that's why there's a ton of ode here. Like I said, talk about Django. You know, there was a movie 1966, I believe, called Django. It is not about this at all. It's a white dude. It's the guy we talked about later. But yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. This is his like love letter to these like spaghetti westerns.
I love that. I thought there was going to be some like deep meaning to the phrase spaghetti western, but I love that that's just because it's Italian.
It's because it's fucking Italian.
Mamma mia.
So they call it spaghetti. All right, King Schultz shoots the damn horse in the head. Come on, man.
Oh, I know. And he says he doesn't want to do it, but he did it.
But he did it to not kill the guy, just crush his leg, and he shoots the other guy.
And he gets killed anyway, I imagine. Well, it's left up to our imagination, but...
Oh, no, it's not. They show it.
They did show it?
They show them, like, shoot him. Yeah, and they, like...
Oh, yeah,
they
you're right.
Beat him and, like, you're shoot right. him, yeah. Yeah, so the slave retribution we get here, so they kind of lets these slaves go as he frees Django, saying he needs him to identify these brittle brothers. And they're just like, and he talks about the North Star. And he's like, there you go, the North Star. They're in Texas, okay? It's going to be a hell. I go south. Go to Mexico before you go north, because you still have to go through, at the time, Oklahoma, which was, quote, Indian territory, through Missouri, through Kansas, if you're doing that, which, again, were absolutely slave states, even though they ended up not seceding. Yeah, I would just go south to Mexico instead of trying to go up north through all of that shit.
Yeah, because he said something to them like, try and find pastures new of this, you know, something to do with parts of this country that are a little bit more forward thinking and some kind, something like that. And I was like, how are they going to get there?
Dude, it's four or five, again, black dudes on their own. The minute they get seen by anybody, it's going to be like, these are runaway slaves. Like, they're going to
be a tough journey.
It's going to be impossible. Like, I truly don't believe that would be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Mexico was a better shout.
They get picked up. So yeah, King proposes to Django to find the brittle brothers, kill him to give him $75 and freedom. This will never be an equal partnership. I think at best Django gets one third.
Yes, that's it. That's what he says apart when they actually partner up a little bit later on as well. So like, I'll give you a third.
A third.
So yeah, he did. He said, "I love the." You know, where they're having a discussion in the bar whilst they're waiting for the marshal to show up. And he's like, I'm going to make this slavery thing work for me for a while. And I was like, oh, shit, okay.
And that's the thing, too, where it kind of turns, where at the beginning, Schultz is just, he's not an abolitionist, you know, by any means. It's just he's working through it. He's not for slavery. And if he sees it, he's just like, oh, whatever, I'll free these slaves. But I don't think he really gives a shit about it until more with Django when we kind of see it. Now, maybe you can say that that's an allegory for a lot of Northern people in general, was they really didn't give a shit about slavery. And then the Civil War erupts.
It wasn't affecting them.
It didn't affect them. And then they realize, oh, this is kind of bad once they go down. So I don't know. Maybe that was a little too deep that I'm giving this movie a little bit more credit.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right. So they get to Daughtry, Texas, I believe is what it is. I don't know if that's real. I forgot to look it up. He kills the sheriff, just guns him down the middle of the street, and then says, now go get the marshal. The marshal arrives, and we set up a straight-on Red Dead event right here.
Love it. Love it so much. And there's so much of this film that is just Red Dead Redemption to its core. And yeah, you're right. Well, everyone's got the guns on the doors. You have to come out with your hands up. I loved it.
Yeah, they just have it set in there. And what was that was in Saint-Denis when what's-his-face got shot in the street? The right-hand man.
Okay.
I can't remember the name. Right-hand man of Dutch. I can't remember. It's when the bank robbery went crazy.
Yeah, I don't remember their names. It's actually been years since I played that.
I know. It really makes me want to play it so bad.
Oh, God. So yeah, even just running around on your horse.
No,
love it.
Just in there.
I want to go rob a train.
Yeah. All right, so when it comes out, again, we get to see how, you can say, not diabolical or conniving King Schultz is. Is apparently the man, the sheriff, was an outlaw posing as that sheriff. And not only do they get out of this, they get $200 for it.
I love that. His closing line to this whole argument is, and actually, you owe me $200.
Yeah, like, you owe me $200. The marshal's just like, oh, shit.
Well, shit.
But here's the thing, and it goes back to, I just don't understand it. You could just go town to town and be whoever the fuck you wanted. This guy apparently just posed as the sheriff, got elected.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think he said he was there for about 2 years and he'd just set up his whole new identity, got elected as sheriff or whatever, and was just living a whole new life. And if nobody knows what you look like, then you can get away with it.
Like, you have the wanted bills to do it and be like, I guess he looks like him. But then, I don't know, like, this marshal is just going to believe this guy? Like,
yeah,
you just believe him. Oh, this guy just gunned down the sheriff. Oh, I guess that's him. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, so much of it is just believing what people would say.
Everybody's very trustworthy. Whereas now everyone be whipping out their phone, like, let me Google that real quick.
No, I ain't believing shit. There's some fucking, some football players about to go to the NFL from Texas Tech. Literally just said he doesn't believe in space or other planets. Yeah. And it's just, that's the fucking world we live in.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. That's one word for it. All right, so Django wants to buy his wife back, named Broomhilda.
Yes, and I love this little story that he tells. And just essentially is just telling the story of the film that we're about to watch.
Yeah, pretty much. And again, Broomhilda, very recognizable as the jammin' folklore, tied up perfectly. Obviously, that's going to get King Schultz's attention, obviously, him being German.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, so let's head to Tennessee, the Shield of the South. And
Yeah,
that's a nickname for it. Big Daddy, Don Johnson. I fucking love Don Johnson. This is whose father?
Oh, I don't know.
Johnson.
Dakota.
Dakota Johnson. This is her dad.
No way.
Yep, this is him.
Oh, her daddy is Big Daddy?
Big Daddy. Love Don Johnson. Love him and everything he's in. Yeah, him and Melanie Griffith created Dakota Johnson, who, I'm telling you what, I am warming up to her. Not her movies. They're fucking terrible.
Oh, we love Dakota Johnson as a person.
Dude, like, the whole thing with Madame Web, of her being amazing. Like, this movie sucks, I get it. And she just had a thing come out today. I couldn't click on it. I didn't have time to read it. Where she said, like, she understands why Madame Web failed. And she knows, like, what to avoid in the future. I'm like, that is so fucking refreshing.
Yeah.
Of her just not giving a shit.
Yeah, she's, like, she's pretty much been like that since 50 Shades... Probably the first 50 Shades film, she was, you know, playing the game as such because it was her first big thing. And then after that, she's just so, like, unapologetically herself and just doesn't take any bullshit. And I find it so funny to watch her on talk shows.
She is our favorite. She is On the Path's favorite Nepo baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we accept her as a Nepo baby.
And that helps being able to say whatever you want when your parents are literally Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith.
She's got it good.
There you go. All right. So many memes from this movie. So many memes. That I don't know if I'd remember before, like, seeing it. God, and they're all DiCaprio, basically. But there's a great one here that I've only recently seen when I looked up, like, Django memes. So Big Daddy's up on his little porch, and he's saying to, you know, King Schultz, oh, you know, hey, we'll show you around. Tells one of the slaves to show Django around. And it's just like, oh, he's a free man, so, you know, treat him better. And she's like, you want to treat him like the white folks? No, that's not what I said. He's very clear. That meme right there I saw is so good.
Yeah, I love that one. There's also one of Schultz, and it's been a sound clip. It's not necessarily a GIF, so it's not visual. It's a sound GIF that I've heard so much on TikTok over the years. And it's where he says, it's like a reward. Have you heard that one?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, it's so funny. And people have memed it, you know, beyond its existence. And I just, it's so weird when you hear that. It's very much the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of, like,
good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And
which is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the Leo pointing at the screen meme.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's when he says it's like a reward. And I think it was after his first sip of the beer. It's like a reward.
Okay. It's like a reward. I almost want to talk like Werner Herzog when I try to do Christoph Waltz.
What's like that a reward. Sound like?
Don't look at the video. No, it's a German guy. Do you remember the premiere, the first episode of Mandalorian? The guy that hires Mando to find him. The German guy.
God, I'd have to rewatch it.
Timothy Treadwell. You don't want to listen to it. It's a very distinct cadence he has. That I have to like prep to do like off the cuff there. But yeah, this very reward here. Yeah, it's just kind of interesting in there. How about Django's outfit?
The blue one?
The bright blue when the slave showing around, she's like, you a free man? He's like, yeah. I mean, you choose to dress like that?
Love it. I love it. I remember when this film would have first came out, so it would have been what, 2012? So I was at uni. So I was at film school when this came out. And I remember I didn't watch it for ages. And I never even saw anything about it. And then somebody, I don't know who it was, somebody I was at uni with was like, oh, I've got it on DVD. Do you want to watch it? And I was like, okay. And, you know, the whole film, the whole beginning of the film is so orange. Like, it's so warm. It's so, like, rusty colored and everything like that. So I was like, there's going to be some big, like, blue... When the movie changes, it must be something blue, because I was like in the thick of like color theory. Yeah. And if you don't know, like blue and orange are like opposites, and they look, if you look at film posters in particular, blue and orange is everywhere because it's just very visually appealing to the eye. They work together really well. All the film, like Transformers is really bad for it. It's just all blue and orange. And the person I was with stopped the movie and was like, are you joking? Have you seen this? And I was like, no, I've not seen it. Like, have you seen a poster? Have you seen clips? And I was like, no, I've not seen anything. And then sure enough,
he shows up
in this bright blue suit. And I was like, yes, I'm a film student.
Yeah, it was a nutty choice there. And I thought
he stayed in it for longer, but he doesn't actually stick around in that suit for that long.
It's ridiculous. And There is a thing in here where this oil painting of the blue boy, and it's literally what he's wearing. And that's in the, you go to the Wikipedia, it shows it. This 1770s painting.
Oh my god!
Of this guy in the blue.
It's the
boy.
Little socks and the shoes. I forgot it was the little like 3/4 length trousers and everything.
Yeah. But again, it's talking about a fucking slave that gets to wear whatever he wants. Like, yeah, he's gonna be.
Of course, you're gonna pick that. Yeah,
we don't do that. All right, so he confronts the Brittle brothers here, shoots one, and whips the other to the amusement of the other slaves. You get to watch a black dude whip kind of this overseer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like that was a good moment for the whole gang.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering again, as always, something like this, where's the getaway?
Oh, there was no plan to get out, was there?
No, and that was kind of the thing where he just went off the cuff and did it. And so, obviously, Big Daddy and all them roll up with the shotguns and the rifles, and he does this thing of, look, this is them, blah, blah, blah. We have them bounties. I'm just thinking, there's no witnesses here. But slaves who are not actual witnesses, who don't count because, again, they're not people. I meant to say earlier, fuck, I forgot it. When Django only got a third, I was like, oh, man, he didn't even give him 2/5. And that's a history joke, because when this country started to count for population, because the South did not want, the slaves were not people, right? So you couldn't count them as a person. 2/5 compromise. So at the beginning of this country, maybe the United States, a white citizen counted as one person for the census. A slave was 2/5.
So the idea
they were 2/5 a person. But they wanted the representation for Congress. You know what I mean? Yeah. They needed that representation. And so, but yeah, they only counted as 2/5. So there's a 2/5 clause joke.
A history joke for you.
There it is. But yeah, so, and I'm sitting here thinking like, they could blow these two dudes away, bury them anywhere they want on their, mm-hmm. I don't know, 700-acre plantation. And then when anybody comes asking for them, being like, nope, never seen them.
Yeah, that's it. I always, it's the old West. I sort of thought, the reason they don't is like, I'm pretty sure the woman that Django asks about, she says something like, oh, they've been here for a few weeks. So it's not like they actually know them really that well.
They were there a few weeks?
I'm pretty sure that's what she says. Yeah, he's like, they could have arrived any time recently. The three guys that they end up killing, the brothers.
Oh, that they've been there a few weeks. Yes, okay, yes. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, when they tell the story, all these guys have just rolled in and they're not who they say they are. I think it's quite believable.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, you still have a black dude shooting and killing two people on your property in front of other slaves. And that, like, is a huge thing. Again, I'm not going to dissect and talk about the historiosity or anything of that here. But one thing that would do is there was a ton of resistance to slavery. And I'm not sure this movie really gets that a lot of slaves do. Like, here, fuck, a lot of these women, the house slaves or whatever, they're just chilling. Traipsing around the grounds. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. I really fucking don't think they'd be able to just walk around and do all that. Typically, maybe there was one where a guy wanted to, you know, get with them and kind of did all that. But like, there's right there to have a black dude show up and kill overseers in front of slaves. Sorry, not fucking happening. And again, I'm not discussing the idea of the movie. I just want people to understand that any kind of resistance to this order would not have been allowed. Encouraging, because you imagine if you're there and you see this and you're like, holy shit, I can do that. All right. Yeah, no, yeah, any kind of resistance
Rile
to slavery,
up the crowd.
Yes, was put down brutally.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we see in the next scene.
With
when they try and kill Schultz and Django, they ride up on the horses, and we get the whole scene with the bags on their head.
Yeah, okay.
Discussing the eye holes, Jonah Hill jump scare.
Yeah, okay. And okay, a funny thing before then, yeah, we'll get to that right there. Funny thing before then, though, is I have down here great scene about Django learning what the word positive means.
Oh, so good.
I'm positive they did.
I'm positive he's dead.
I'm positive he's dead.
Love that.
Yeah, and so here we go. Hello, surprise Jonah Hill.
Yeah, I didn't put this together at all. Do you know what? I always get so confused with, because the casting is so similar to the likes of a lot of Tarantino films. They've got the same characters as like Wolf of Wall Street. So I get those two directors mixed up, and then I'm like, oh, maybe this is how he got the part in Wolf of Wall Street. And I'm like, hold on a second, that's not Tarantino.
No.
But it is Margot Robbie. It is Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, it's the same vibe, different font.
Yeah. And so I did look up, Jonah Hill was supposed to play this character who never got into the movie, and he ended up taking this little part. Kurt Russell was supposed to play this other character that never got in. He had to drop out. And they combined that character with the Billy Crash character played by Walton Goggins.
Oh, okay. And that's the other guy that's speaking here at the rally.
Billy, was he at this rally?
I think so.
No, he was at Candyland. He's at Candyland.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
He's the one who had the gun to Broomhilda's face, or the head. The one who really yells at Django at the beginning.
Yeah, grim.
When they're riding up to Candyland. All right, so another great scene. So we're talking about this. It's the Klan, not Klan scene, okay?
Yeah.
And so what I try to look up, I saw a thing that said that these were the Regulators, a thing from North Carolina. And so I looked at the Regulators in North Carolina. They were a group that was primarily colonial times, like pre-American Revolution. I could not find anything about people with bags over their heads. So I don't think this is based on anything other than, again, what Tarantino does is go adjacent. This is obviously meant to be the Klan, but again, historical-wise, as we learned from Forrest Gump episode.
Yes, we did.
The Klan was started after the Civil War by Forrest Gump's great-great-granddaddy or whatever, fucking Nathan Bedford Forrest. So this is supposed to be them. It's just an adjacent thing. The bags are supposed to be humorous. And so they are. It's fucking hilarious. Tarantino cut this scene out. So when he first made it, this woman, fucking Amy, I can't remember her name, a high up at Sony or whoever the fuck it was, like loved it. But Tarantino was worried that people would lose out on the satire of it. Like, think it's funny for the wrong reasons. I don't know. I guess he really didn't doubt it. So then he showed it to audience. When he first had it in there, this woman was just like, why the fuck isn't it in there? Convinced him to put it in for test audiences. Test audiences loved it. And so it stayed in the movie.
It is funny, and I think so that kind of humor, people now seem to really like this kind of humor where it's like a silly conversation about something that's quite serious, and then it's quite a normal conversation. It feels like a conversation, maybe not the subject matter, but it could just be your colleague sat in the office just annoyed at one another and trying to come to a resolution, but it's about this thing that's actually really quite serious.
Yeah, like they're literally about to go lynch these two people. And it's just like, Don Johnson's so good. Puts it on. It's like, oh, I can't see out of this thing. Oh, I think I made it worse. And everyone's like, I can't see. Who cut these holes? And the guy back there, my wife stayed up cutting 30 bags. God damn it, you sons of bitches. If you don't like it, you do it. I'm out of here. And he just rides off.
I love the guy that's like, okay, I think we can all agree they were a good idea.
And they're like,
but
it just hasn't
worked out, and we'll try it again next time. We'll do it without the bags first. And I was like, this is me in any conflict.
And that's the thing. It's such an anarchistic thing that I don't know, maybe people would have done it 160 years ago, but it is a modern thing of it being like, okay, we all can appreciate the effort. All right. Next time we'll do it a little bit differently. So for now, and then Jonah Hill just like, are we using the bags or not? And just,
he's like,
damn.
I'm lost. Are we doing
I'm
bags
lost.
Or
are
not?
The bags? He's like, put the bags on. The only people that need to see are the horse. The horse goes, and then they just go into it. It's so goddamn good.
Brilliant. And even though it dragged out. Like, that scene went on a long time as well. I found it funny the whole way through.
But, and that's the thing, it kept dragging out, and you realize, like, it, the only way this would have been funnier is if they did the whole joke of, by the time they get there, that they're gone. Like, they argued here for so long that by the time they ride up on Django, they're just gone. They're like, wait, what time is it? Oh, shit, it's four in the, you know, they've been like, oh, they probably got up. Or the sun starts to come up and they're like, how long have we been arguing about these goddamn bags?
Yeah, that would have been extra silly, but it would have worked as well.
Yeah. All right. So Django and King set a trap in here. And how about this right here? Django gets his gun and he shoots Big Daddy at full speed riding a horse. So I'm just going to start calling him Django Sue.
Why?
Instead of Mary Sue?
Oh, Mary Sue.
Instead of Mary Sue. But for real though, for real, how the fuck? I'm sorry. This is a fucking 1858 rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Right from 18, sometime in the 1850s. Actually, I guess it was a fucking rifle. Rifles were about invented at that time. Civil War was the first one with rifles as opposed to like muskets and stuff like that. Has he ever shot one of these motherfuckers before?
I know they say
he's a natural, but I'm like, all right. But is it because he's a guy and because he's Jamie Foxx and because it's Tarantino, we're just going to allow it? But I'm like, this is the epitome of fucking Mary Sue.
Yeah, you can be a natural, but you still have to practice. And like, you can't just be perfect the first time you pick up a gun.
Look what happened when you picked up a pistol from like 20 feet away. And look how, and me, it's same too. There were sometimes I'd look and be like, oh my God, I fucking missed.
Yes.
I missed where I was aiming by like a couple of feet from a pistol, maybe 20 feet away. And this is a fucking 1850s rifle, horse at full speed.
That's the worst thing. It's a moving target. We were shooting a piece of paper.
Yes. No. And so this, I don't know, this was, it's not a fucking big deal, but this was egregious use of like, oh, he's a natural.
Yeah, no, I've said this before, but this sticks out to me way more now that I've actually shot a gun. Because previously I'd be like, oh yeah, you just point and shoot, you know, it's like Call of Duty. But no, guns kick back a lot. I actually have that sheet of paper that we shot at in my spare room.
It's got like
the ducks, the ducks and the targets. But yeah, every time I would line it up and I'm looking straight and then you shoot and you don't even feel the kick that much. And then you look and it's all the way over there.
Like, where the fuck did that go? I did. I remember when I was, again, little, that I shot a like six shooter, like a Colt. That fucking thing, like, about jumped out of my hand and was like,
yeah,
10 feet off.
Scary, really scary. So yeah, having to shoot a rifle for the first time, it's the moving target for me. I could, when he shoots the father of the young boy in the field, can almost get away with that. But for your first big shot to be this horse, moving so fast is insane.
And when he shoots the father, because that's coming up here, this is kind of after we get, I think this is after we get this little montage of him learning to read, shoots, you know, he does all that. He gets the 1/3 in there. And so, yeah, so pretty much that's what we've got right there. We're at the, I don't even know what time this was in there, but now a profitable year, and we have to get to, pause for dramatic effect in here, Mississippi.
Over the screen. I was like, why are we getting these big titles all of a sudden?
Because it's Mississippi, largely considered the worst fucking state in the union.
Really?
It is. It's really fucking sad because it's like always down there in education. It's one of the poorest. It's also percentage-wise the biggest African-American percentage in there. And so it's just a deep South state that's pretty much run by maybe a certain political party. It doesn't give a shit about anybody else, and so it's kind of one of those right there. But yeah, Mississippi.
Yeah.
I don't recommend the South really fucking at all. Like, when you come, maybe big cities. Go to Atlanta. Atlanta's all right.
Atlanta.
Stay out of Florida. You don't need to go to Florida. Except maybe Miami. I do want to go to Miami. I haven't been there. All right, so we hear this thing when it comes up about these Mandingo fights, all right? And that is the name of some, this is the name of a very famous porn star.
Is it?
Yes, you can imagine. Use your imagination as to, you know, maybe why, what they look like and why they would be so famous.
Okay.
And so these probably never happened. There was a thing in here that talked about Tarantino was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. There is no historical record of these ever happening. There were rumors of it. But at the same time, it goes back to this. Slavery was economic, okay? It was almost in a way like these weren't people. It was chattel to them. So it's like, say you buy a cow, say you buy an animal or something like that. You're not going to get anything out of it. You know what I mean? You're not going to buy it to purposefully abuse it and kill it in that sense. You want something out of it. Now, a lot of people use that as an argument to say, oh, well, they didn't abuse the slaves that much. Why would they maim a worker? Why would they do all this when they couldn't work? And it was like, you're right. That's why they would terrorize them and they would abuse mm-hmm. them to the point of where they could still work, but keep that terror in there. You know, like you would mm-hmm. whip them. You obviously wouldn't cut a fucking arm off because then they wouldn't be able to work as much. But you could beat them. You could do whatever it is. And so, but again, the historicity of this, this was something that was never on record to have actually happened. These fights.
Like the fighting. Yeah. It seemed extra brutal. I know this film is very brutal.
I skipped this and I skipped the dog scene because it's just like, I don't need to see or hear this shit. I can figure it out what's happening.
Yeah, it's absolutely grim and it goes on as well for quite a while.
Yeah, skip. So after this right here, one of the slaves kills the other one. We're going to learn D'Artagnan is the victorious one here. Django goes to the bar. And as we talked about earlier, the man that talks to him by the name of Nero Franco is the guy who played Django in the 1966 Spaghetti Western.
That's a nice little cameo because at the time of watching it, I had no idea and it didn't really stick out to me. But if you knew, then that's a nice little nod to the original film.
Yeah, and especially the saying, you know, the D is silent. Yes. He's like, I know. It's like, you cheeky bastard, you, Tarantino. Mm-hmm,
I liked it.
All right, so the first meme that we get is the introduction to Calvin Candy, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, is the zoom in on his face as he turns around. That's the first one. The second one is, gentlemen, you had my curiosity. Now you have my attention.
It's so memeable, this whole film. And this, you're right, even a lot of it is just little looks from Leonardo DiCaprio because he has this perfect kind of, he's got this very unsettling smug face all the time, and then he's got Samuel Jackson over his shoulder all the time being annoying and smug as well. And yeah, the memes are just perfect.
Yeah, the reaction meme too of him holding the drink, like the that one, my God, that might be the most, that's up there with like top five most memeable reaction shots, or just bad memes of just saying some edgelord saying something and ooh, this is me. It's just like, oh fuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just,
there's so many memes of Leonardo DiCaprio like holding up a drink. Not necessarily in this film, but like Great Gatsby, there's one.
The Gatsby one.
Yeah, man, the one, no the kidding. Cheers. Yeah. He's a very memed man.
Yeah. All right. So Django is way too comfortable during all this. They're on their way to Candyland. And we get fucking great song here. 100 Black Coffins by Rick Ross. And very good use of anachronistic music here. Using modern music in the historical context. Speaking of Great Gatsby. Great Gatsby did the same thing there. I know Sofia Coppola did that with Marie Antoinette. And so, this is just a banger of a song right here. As they're kind of walking these slaves, kind of seeing the slaves in the field on the way to Candyland.
Mm-hmm. Is this when they first start? I think it's the first time Django starts interacting with the other slaves as well. And they are not taking a liking to him because he talked to Schultz earlier about how this is the worst he could possibly be. Like a black slave is like the worst of the worst and they're all going to hate him.
Black slave is the worst of the worst. They talk about it in a house slave, as they call it. House in, or I know a big thing come in, they would use the term like house Negro, something like that. I don't know. Malcolm X, civil rights from 1960s, was big on saying that, like the field slave and the house slave were two different things. Book called Uncle Tom's Cabin came out by Harriet Beecher Stowe, I think is who that was, like right before the Civil War. And that is like a slur that a lot of black Americans will use against other black Americans who they perceive as this. They'll call them Uncle Toms.
Okay.
And so, and another thing here I saw in there is a lot of black Republicans are called this, that, you know, so much of it is going in there. Herman Cain was a guy that ran for president. I saw a bunch of stuff in there about that. Kanye was another one that came up that as soon as he started doing all this stuff, started seeing, again, I was big on black Twitter when I had Twitter, of just calling him an Uncle Tom, calling him a house in and all that stuff there. And so, yeah. And again, he has to play the part. We should say that Django was told to play this part of being the baddest motherfucker. And he leans into it as this guy looks at him. He's like, don't look at me, blah, blah, blah. Bust out your other eye. And so he's playing this motherfucker right there. And yeah. I kept thinking, I was wondering if this was going to come back and bite him in the ass.
Yeah, I was so, because, yeah, you're right. Schultz kind of briefs Django by saying, you're going to have to play this character. And the most important rule is you do not ever break your character. And then there were so many moments where Schultz is kind of saying to him, pack it in, pack it in. I'm like, is this part of the act? Is this just so maybe Leonardo will overhear him saying this and it's all just part of the act? Like, he doesn't want him to stop, really? I could never figure that out, if Schultz wanted him to keep going or if he actually wanted him to settle down a wee bit.
And again, it tied in perfectly with the way Schultz goes out when he couldn't contain it and he kills Calvin and he goes, sorry, I couldn't resist. And then
I think he knew he was going to get shot in that moment as well, because he put his arms out. He was like, couldn't help it.
He read the screenplay. He knew what was up.
Yeah.
He knew what he had to do. Yeah. All right. So on the way to Candyland, we talked about it. D'Artagnan, the escaped slave, the fighter there, was cornered and mauled by dogs. Nope. As soon as he said, release him, I just hit a head. And I'm like, don't need to see it. But again, I think it's very good, though, because I do think in this moment is when Schultz turns from it being indifferent, if you will, to slavery, to now him being like, okay, like, fuck this dude.
Yeah.
Like, this is just bad in and of itself. It's not just to help Django. All of this is bad.
Yeah, because initially it's quite funny, Schultz's journey, because initially he's like, you help me with this and I'll set you free. And then he sets him free and he's like, okay, you have a wife. I'll help you find out where she is. Essentially, like, he'll escort him to where they were both sold originally. And then you can go find her. And then by the time they get to that, he's like, okay, well, I'll come to Candyland with you. Like, he keeps getting more and more involved. And then you're right, as soon as he sees the dog attack, he is like physically turning away, and you see him have flashbacks of it later on, and that's where he's in too deep then, and he can't just sit back anymore.
Yeah, he's become beholden to him, kind of, where he almost feels like he needs to help him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he even said, he says, I feel responsible for you because responsible, I'm the one who gave you your freedom.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know it's explained also that Calvin sees kind of Schultz turn away, and then Django says along the likes of, like, he hasn't been in America as long as you hasn't seen as many Americans as him.
Yes.
And I do think, and I know it's supposed to be, it's also, again, I know I'm kind of talking circles here. This is a hard movie to watch. Like, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I'll ever just sit down and watch this. I could sit down and watch Inglourious Basterds right now. As hard as some of that is, Inglourious Basterds didn't take place in a concentration camp. Like, if it would have taken place in a concentration camp and had to do with somebody visiting, like a Schindler's List kind of thing, where it's someone on the inside to help out, that would have been different. This is just so brutal. And it's good to show that brutality, because I do think it gets lost on a lot of people. And though this isn't a historical movie in that sense, it's still showing you kind of what it was like. And, you know, it's not too far-fetched from it. They were fucking brutalized. By being whipped, by being beaten, just the idea of slavery in itself is brutal. The ownership of people and working them to the bone like that is in there. Yeah. Yes, and the cruelty of it, you know, is the point of it. And so that's just where I just, like, this shit here, just like, man, I just, I enjoyed it. But man, I don't think I could revisit this again.
Well, that was me all over, because whenever we've been doing this podcast for a couple of years now, and I've said so many times to you, oh my God, you have to watch Django. Like, it's so good. But saying that, I've only seen it once before. Yeah. And that was that time I was just talking about, where I watched it at uni. So that's like 12 years ago. So it's not something I've been desperate to go back to either, until I've had a reason to, like this.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because as ahistorical as these movies are, and I've told people, and I'll say it again, parts of Inglourious Basterds is the most real a historical movie is that I've seen, because the best thing that fucking Tarantino does is he puts people in the native tongue. Oh, Germans are here. They're going to speak German. It's going to be German people speaking German. It's French people. It's going to be French people speaking French. And so for that movie, you go 15, 20 minutes at a time where you don't hear English. And I'm like, this is putting you in there. This is putting you in that. This is Nazi occupied Paris. And you see the uniforms. The uniforms were done amazingly. You get the feel of it. And I'm like, when you watch that movie, it is fake. Don't think that Hitler got machine gun at the end. Yeah. Don't think they didn't do it. But absolutely think about the brutality of the Nazis. This is how they would act. They would go into these Parisian restaurants like they fucking own the place, because they did. An SS officer would run the place over the Wehrmacht and the army because they fucking could. So they could come in and be like, give me this, give me this. I'll just fucking leave. Bill it to somebody, or don't fucking bill me because you fucking lost in 1940.
Yeah. Oh my God, I need to watch that film again.
I will literally watch that any time of the week. Although we don't. Yeah. I'm going to tease something, but I can't. All right. So we get to Candyland and we meet Steven. We talked about before, played by Samuel L. Jackson, the real villain of the movie. And I don't want to say,
sure.
I
he's
don't
a bad guy.
But that's the thing. But I don't want to be like, oh, the real villain is the black guy and not the white slavers. But I do think that this is hit on because, again, he is a house slave. All right. Yeah. To the epitome. Like, and the first thing he is why is that in on that horse? Like, he immediately goes after. God, it is so fucking funny. Django calls him Snowball, and Sam Jack's just like, who the fuck are you talking to? Get your black ass. And just, it's so goddamn good. But this, again, is that perfect representation of the house slave.
Yeah, yeah. He was so just kiss-ass to Leonardo DiCaprio in particular, but just the whole family, and it was just so uncomfortable to watch. And yeah, it's just, it's really grim. And
but he talks back so much. It's so fun. He's instantly like, yeah. What? He in a big house. He's like,
he's
comfortable there. And he's like, put him up in there. But he's like, well, we've got to burn the sheets, whatever. And he goes, those are my sheets to burn. It's like, that is fucking hilarious to me. Again, mm-hmm. The racism of they're literally going to burn the sheets.
Yeah, and they're so brazen about it.
Those
not
are
even
my
like
sheets to burn.
Yeah, and you're right, the way he delivered it, it's not like he was, and yeah, yeah, to burn the sheets when he's gone. It was, they're my sheets to
burn. They're my sheets to burn. Go do it, goddamn it. It's just
so weird.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring this up earlier. In this moment, Leo DiCaprio is perfect. I loved him when it's like this. I just don't find that dude menacing ever.
Yeah, yeah. And so
the dinner scene later when he's doing all that and he's yelling, I just don't find him menacing. And so I think he was fine. He was perfect for these scenes where he's kind of the aloof jackass. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Like this right here where he's all charming. Steven, go blah, 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 blah. Oh, but he's going to be big house. Now I say, and he just builds that. Finally, we just like, go get it. God damn it. And then finally the lip on that boy getting worse and worse. And then he starts yelling for his sister. In this moment, I thought he was great.
Yeah, I really like him in this film. And then I don't think his character is like supposed to be that smart, or not like but like he's not supposed to be this super savvy businessman, because obviously he doesn't see what's happening in front of him, and it takes Steven exposing it all to him, and then he's pissed off that he's been embarrassed and like made a fool out of more than anything. So I guess he's just angry at the end, and yeah, that whole scene is just, oh God, that's one of my favorite parts of the film, I think, because it's so tense.
Yeah. But before then, he's definitely banging his sister, right?
Oh, fully. That is the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing about this film is the way he is in love with his sister.
I think it's just an incest, Southern racist people, hillbilly joke.
Yeah, probably.
That's a big thing in the States. I don't know if you know that or not, but that's a huge thing of like Southern incest. Like,
oh, I only know about Alabama.
Arkansas is a big one. Like Arkansas was always like the main one. I know that because my mom is from Arkansas, so have a lot of that stuff. But it's pretty much just the South, deep South in general. There, one thing I wanted to see if you noticed as well with the sound here. Every time somebody eats from a fork, not every time, I should say this. A lot of times when somebody eats from a fork, it's like a sword or blade unsheathing.
Ooh,
like you hear the
cool. Yeah,
did you not notice that?
I didn't notice it. Okay. No, I noticed some sound editing later in the film, but not this.
Okay, it's not every time, but it's definitely Django when he's eating, when they talk about the fighters, and he's like, Samson's the best. The other two are pretty good. Ching! Like, right as he eats it, so matter-of-factly. Cool. And then also, I think when Calvin is eating the white cake, when he's being questioned about something, he just takes it out quickly, and you just hear the ching!
Ching, ching, ching. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's clever.
Yeah. All right, so here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Again, I know everyone's like, why didn't they talk about it? It's a long-ass fucking movie. We can't talk
about
it.
It's very long,
Hit us up in the Discord or anything else you wanted to ask us about. Here goes the dinner scene, okay? What I thought was so, I don't know if it was supposed to be this unintentionally funny or whatever, But when he talks about when King is playing up in the, oh, I heard my native tongue. You have no idea what it's like to hear that. And then Calvin goes, well, I can't imagine 2 weeks in Boston. And it just brings the house down where Steve is like, oh, Macedonia to Boston. And then his lawyer is just like choking on his food. I'm like, was this supposed to be that funny?
That's just them lick-arsing more, I think, because it's but only more those than, two that piss themselves laughing.
Yes, but they were always laughing. Oh, little things like that when he talked about why Eskimo Joe got his name. But this was just like, oh, they're like hooting and hollering, like slapping thighs.
Knee slapping,
here.
Everything. Yeah, it was so, so bizarre. And what was the joke again?
It was he hadn't heard his native, like he couldn't imagine.
Oh, yes,
he, not
2 weeks
his,
in Boston.
And then he said the Boston. I'm like, was that a Departed joke or something? A Departed reference of him being feed me to chop me up and feed me to the poor. Again, great movie. Oh, the Departed, great fucking movie. All right, the phrenology scene. All right, this is after the fact. This is when he's starting to put in the pressure. He pulls out this skull and he starts talking about phrenology. Are you familiar with that?
No, I am not.
So phrenology was something that went up even to like the fucking like mid 20th century. The Nazis did a big thing on it as well. But it was really a late 1800s. Red Dead definitely has a thing on it. I remember a doctor talking about its skull shapes. And so what it was, this was a thing in which typically not just Americans, but it was Western Europeans. It was white people in general. Big time British is imperialist, colonialist thing where they basically said, oh, the way the skull is shaped, he talks about here that, oh, white people have a skull shape that is better for the brain. Oh, the brain is bigger in this. And he mentions here about these three dimples. I didn't know anything about that specifically, about how the African mind is more subservient in that servile, he calls it. And this was literally used to justify like racial or like race based genetic, I should say, racism or supremacy.
Yeah, isn't that wild? Like they went to these extremes to be like, oh no, it's okay because of this shape in your skull.
But at this point right now, science was coming up. This is post Darwin. Like this is post like they're talking about from apes. Oh, I'm not from an ape. They might have been, but they realized like, oh shit, that's it. You can't just say racist. You can't just do it because the white supremacy, slavery wise, had been broken in the US. And again, a lot of anti-imperialist stuff had happened even in Western Europe, to where now it's like we need a science-based system. Oh, look, the skulls are different. We're just going to fucking say that we're going to make this up right here.
Go, exactly. It's the, oh, we've noticed totally a slight discrepancy here. Let's run with that.
Yeah. And so we brought it up earlier, and it's something that I almost think everybody knows because I literally told somebody that I was we're covering Django, and this is becoming like the most known piece of trivia. And the joke always is in Lord of the Rings, Aragorn kicks the helmet and he breaks his toe, this right here, when Leo smashes his hand and you hear the glass break, yes, he actually cut his hand. The first scene, or the first he's doing it, is his actual blood, and you see him picking out.
See him picking the glass out of his hand throughout the rest of the scene. What a guy. Yep. What a guy.
And they said at the end, they all gave him like a standing ovation. That sounds like one of those memes where it's just like, in that man, Albert Einstein. And everybody clapped in the circle. It sounds like that, but I'm sure maybe what it did. But what some people still do not know is later in that scene when he puts the blood on Kerry Washington's face, Broomhilda, that was fake blood.
Yeah, I was really glad to read that because, like I said earlier to you, I've seen that piece of trivia all over the place and I didn't know that there was a cut. And I just remember thinking, fair enough if you want to carry on with the scene, but you don't unexpectedly rub your own blood all over someone's face like that. And because Kerry Washington's amazing and her reaction is so good, there was parts of me that thought, did he do that? Because that's really fucking weird and you shouldn't do that. But then, I did a little bit of, I mean, I was going to say I did some research, but I read the Wikipedia page.
And did a little research.
I'm a journalist. And it says that that's a separate take where they use fake blood for the second take.
Yeah, I think not only would that violate like an unwritten code of acting, I think that would actually violate labor laws or working laws to smear.
It's a hazard.
Yeah, it would be absolutely a fucking hazard and disgusting. All right. But what is not disgusting is white cake being served in the parlor. I love me some fucking white cake. I hope my birthday cake coming up is white cake.
I don't know what white cake is. I thought it was like a racist thing.
because they're white.
It was like, let's have white cake.
Because like, they're white.
I prefer a chocolate cake, to be honest. But
no, it's just white cake. That's what it's like, a sheet cake. Typical thing. Like you saw him eating it there, just vanilla and white cake. Sure. So goddamn good.
Looks good. So good. Do you have jam in it or not?
Hell no. I don't know.
That would be like a Victoria sponge.
Yeah, whatever. I just cringed in American.
Why? Victoria sponge is amazing.
Victoria sponge. That's the most British dessert I've ever heard.
It's so nice.
It's got jammies in it.
It's got jam in it. Yeah. Jelly.
Jelly?
Yeah, that's what you would call it.
We have jam over here, but it's got jelly, jam. What would we call it? I'm trying to think of that.
You call it jelly. No, but I'm thinking like peanut butter and jelly, right?
Yeah, like a donut, though. Would we call it interesting? I don't know what I would call it.
Jelly donut?
Yeah, jelly donut. There you go. You're right. That would be it. Jelly. Disrupted my train of thought.
Sorry, with jelly thoughts.
With the jelly. Was there something in Cats about jelly?
Yeah.
The jelly.
That's the character's name. Oh, no, the Jellicles. That's what they're called.
Motherfucker. Fuck that movie. Oh, my God.
Fuck the Jellicles.
The Jellicles. They say
Jellicle cats and okay. Jellicle da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Let me ask you this. Is there more the word Jellicle in Cats or the N-word in Django?
I don't know, but that is good research. We need to research that. I'll watch Django again.
I think I would rather rather hear the N-word 100 times than hear
Jellicle.
I better cut that. I better cut that in there. But that's out of context very well. I would rather hear the N-word. That's it. All right. So we get to this for some reason again. Calvin and all them could just kill these two motherfuckers right here. Mm-hmm. Bury them wherever. No one would be the wiser. But he actually gets the 12,000 out of them. And then they give him his change back. They could have taken everything. So they are men of honor here in Mississippi.
Oh, yes. This is a high honor playthrough of Django.
It's a high honor. Well, for Calvin, maybe not the other. And so they do all that. They give him the bill and then they're going to let him go. Like they literally say they pay him and they're going to let him go. But you got to shake hands in the South or it doesn't count. And that is an actual law in Texas.
God, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, come on. I don't know when you're telling the truth or not, because there's so much ridiculous shit over there.
Let me put another notch in the sociopath thing right here. Yeah, and so I fucking love this about Tarantino movies, where even main characters, the main people, can just die at the drop of a hat. Like, there's no buildup. Yeah. Like, in spoiler alert for Inglourious Basterds, how Michael Fassbender's character and how all of them are there. Are they going to do something? And then it's fucking dead. And there's no pomp and circumstance. There's no final thing. Like, you get this and you know something's going to happen as he walks up to Calvin and out comes the Derringer, which, by the way, had not been invented at that time. Then he pops him right in the heart. And then Calvin stumbles back and then fucking dies.
Yeah.
He doesn't get any.
It.
That's it. And then, he kind of gets final terms. King turns around and is like, sorry, I couldn't resist. And then fucking shotgun. Launched against the room, and then that's it. He doesn't get any final thing. There's no dying in his arms. Oh, I got to see you together, or some kind of Zabienzavende einen, like German shit. It's just no, they're fucking dead.
Yes, and I thought that especially about Calvin, because I was thinking they've been building him up to be this big,
the main
antagonist, and then all of a sudden he's just gone. I was like, yes, great, and we don't see him again. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't then crawl out at the end like, I'm going to get you. And I was like, no, he's dead. This is straight through the heart. He's gone. We're not seeing him again.
And a big thing, too, is Leonardo DiCaprio had problems saying the N-word, which is weird because it's like, bro, you read the script. You knew what you were going to have to say. But he had problems like on set or in rehearsals or before. Finally, Sam Jackson pulls him aside, MFs him a few times. He's like, motherfucker, this is a Tuesday for us. Like, get your shit together. And then he also had a problem just doing the role, like being a sadistic role like that. And Tarantino reportedly told him, you have to do it because if you don't give your all, then the audience will know and will hold you to that.
Exactly. And when you're in a scene with Sam Jackson, Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz, you can't hold back. You got to go in because all of them are going to be trying to be the best in this scene and you have to be the best.
Dude, but Sam... I know it's not supposed to be that funny, and I know it's a problem that Dave Chappelle brought up back when he was funny. on the incarnation of Chappelle show, a big reason he left that was because, again, he used the N-word, was a lot of racial comedy like that, was he got uncomfortable with, like, white people laughing at it in a sense, yeah, and maybe not fully getting it. And while I don't fully get that, I don't fully understand it, something like this can be, like, Sam Jackson's character to me was so fucking funny because he's playing this Uncle Tom character, and it's very much Rufus from The Boondocks, another fucking amazing show, where they have a character like that, where it's basically, it's this character. I honestly think that's where it came from. It kind of looks like him, and The Boondocks was before this movie that came out. And you get it because, like, a white person being racist like that is not really funny, but a black person doing it is funny because it's like, oh, just because he's black doing it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, when he's saying, you in, I'm going to get your black ass off that road, I'm going to beat you. And like, there's just like, oh, because he thinks he's one of them.
You're kind of laughing at his audacity.
Yes, yes,
you're
to like, be like, dude, you're
so
black.
This is so ridiculous. Yes.
Like, you're not ever going to be one of them. And I know that goes back to, again, the political thing in the U.S. when you have a lot of black Republicans. And it's just like, you'll see this at times at these conservative events where a black guy goes there and they're black conservative. And they're like, I heard so much racist stuff. And it's like,
and you're like, yeah,
no shit, dude. Are you that oblivious or that fucking stupid?
Yeah, it's like a lot of the time recently we would have our prime minister, whose name escapes me, Rishi Sunak, and Priti Patel talking about how we have to stop letting immigrants into the country. And it's like, excuse me, but like, aren't both of your parents immigrants? Didn't they come to this country to make your lives better? And now you've got the most important job and now you're saying they can't come in anymore? Yeah. What? Like, that's, I would laugh out loud at that, at how ridiculous it is.
And that's why people like that deserve no respite. No respite.
No.
If they are out having dinner with their families, harass their ass. And I'm telling you, all the shithead fucking Texas politicians in there, you're a Greg Abbott, the mayor, the governor in that sense, Ted Cruz, John Cornyn, all these senators. I'm telling you, if I saw them jokers out, I am absolutely going to ruin their fucking night because they've made lives worse for millions of fucking people, and they deserve absolutely no fucking peace for the rest of their lives.
I wonder, do they even try and go out and do normal stuff?
You'll see that every so often. I know it's happened with Supreme Court justices, and that's why they put forth this bill for like special protection for them, because they'll go out and people will, when I say harass, they're not throwing stuff at them. They're just yelling at them, being like, hey, you're a piece of shit who's making things worse for people. And I'm like, that's fucking public service. You want to go into politics and you want to make life worse for so many people? Congratulations. Here's the other half of it.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're fully okay with doing that.
Yeah, they're not getting physically assaulted. Like, tough shit, man. You want out of it? Fucking retire and go live in Montana on a ranch, and ain't nobody going to bother you.
Yeah, stay out there. Stay out of the way.
There you go. I want to go live on a ranch in Montana and have nobody bother me. Or not bother anybody. I'll do that. Somebody go over there. All right. So, yeah, this is where he talks about he kills him. Gets a 12-gauge, and we get boom, 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 the shootout scene here where the violence is insane. But that's Tarantino for you. The aesthetic, it's not aesthetic occasions. That's not a word. Aesthetic. I don't see aesthetic violence or something. There you go. The violent aesthetic of it.
I love this. And I think it's so, you know, it's so over the top and so stupid. The best one, I think it's actually a little bit later, so we can come back to it. But in this one, it's so, everything's in slow motion. And every time a bullet hits a body, it's like, bloop, 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 and it, like, the sound effect is not what it should sound
it's
like.
It's almost like a missile is coming.
It's so stupid. And the house is just covered in this sprayed orange red blood, and it's so over the top. Obviously, this is big Mary Sue moment where Jamie Foxx takes on however many tens of enemies is coming. This is like zombies on Call of Duty, where you just keep going. It's Red Dead.
Arthur Morgan out here.
It's perfect, yeah. And Broomhilda kind of just disappears, but then somebody captures her. And I always forget that this isn't the climax of the film.
Yes, I'd forgotten that I'd seen the Aussie scene before. I remember, I think I was looking up Tarantino in his cameo or in his movies. So I'd seen that one before, but you're right. When I was at the end, I was just like, okay, so this must be the end. He's going to do something. I'm like, oh my fuck, there's 45 minutes left.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, so I always remember for some reason, I thought this was a big, huge 45 minute scene of a big fight and it ended with the explosion, but it's not. He gets imprisoned again.
He gets imprisoned again. But before then, we get my, I have two lines right okay. here. The first yeah. one is the one I led off with. Who the fuck gave a goddamn gun? All the stuff people are yelling is just funny. Oh, you stupid son of a bitch. Like, all they can do is just yell at him.
You shot
and,
me.
You shot me, you and you mother. All this blah, blah, blah. We also get so good because Steven just hold your fire. Bang, 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 bang. Hold your fire. Bang, 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 bang. Stop shooting, goddammit.
And then I love they stop. That one as well.
Because I can almost imagine them being like, hold your fire. What does that mean? I'm going to keep shooting. But they just go, stop shooting, goddammit. And then that's yeah, it. Then they stop.
Yeah, the way he delivers it is so funny. I think this is when he's like hiding behind a chair at that moment.
He's behind that like armoire. He's behind that armoire.
Oh,
like
that's
he
right,
puts
yeah.
that armoire down. A fucking amazing song here. This is Unchained, and this is James Brown's Payback and Tupac's Untouchable, like mashed up together, little remix here. So, dude, I'm here because I didn't know about that too. So I'm hearing the song and I'm like, holy shit. Because like Rick Ross earlier, very recognizable voice, Tupac. I'm like, oh my God, is that fucking Tupac in here? Tupac was killed in like 1997.
97.
Yeah, he's been dead a
long. I didn't realize it was that long ago. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been dead a long time in there. So excellent.
I do love this music, like the vibe. Oh, it just so it fit perfectly. Yeah. What kind of music is that? Like hip hop or
rap? It's rap.
Yeah, rap music.
Well, James Brown.
James
Brown is like soul. You know,
yes.
I'm assuming
okay.
that James Brown's like the 60s or 70s song, and then with 90s rap.
Mm-hmm. I just think it works so well over loads of different genres. I remember, do you remember when The Witcher brought out a trailer for whatever, probably series 3, and they had like a Kanye song over it?
No,
and everybody
I don't.
Was so fucking angry, and I was like, that's awesome. It was so cool. And they had some kind of Kanye, if it wasn't Kanye, I'll link it in the Discord to what it actually was, but I'm pretty sure it was like some kind of rap music with Kanye West, somebody else, and it just worked and it was so awesome. But everyone was like, they should have the music from The Witcher 3 game on the trailer.
Oh,
and I was
vomit.
Like, it's beautiful music, but how boring for a TV advert, which is not the same thing. Like, I thought the trailer was really cool.
Interesting.
And
yeah, find
similar
that.
Vibes to this. I'll find it.
Yeah, find
it
that
was
and
so
post
cool.
It in there. All right. So, yeah, we have at this point that he gets captured again. He's about to get castrated, right?
Yeah.
He had it hot to cut him off. Mm-hmm. No, they're going to sell him to this like mining group or whatever. And now I have Django cons these poor Aussies.
Oh my God. Yeah, he does. He does.
They're not poor Aussies. They're literally slavers. And I have Tarantino doing an Aussie accent, LMAO, and this goes on like half my screen. It's so ridiculous. It takes me out of the... Seeing Tarantino borderline takes me out of the movie in general. And then as soon as this Aussie accent just comes falling out of his mouth, I'm like, what are we doing? You've taken me out of the movie, dude.
For sure. I was so okay with him being in the scene. I thought he fit in. If you don't know what he looks like, he doesn't stand out too much.
But by this time, you know who Tarantino, like, if you know anything, I think if you pay any attention to movies, you're going to know who this dude is. Like, going back to 94 when Pulp Fiction came out, every fucking crime movie from 1994 to like 1998 was because of fucking Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Like, so many bad crime, witty capers in that sense right there was because of that. So, I don't know. This dude is so recognizable. I don't know who doesn't know what he looks like unless you truly just don't pay attention. Like, you don't watch the Oscars. You don't pay attention to movies.
Yeah, but then the accent is what made me message you being like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Actually made me Google him. And I was about to go.
You did not think he was Australian.
I wanted to double check that he wasn't. Because
did you not hear him speak
so...
with that accent?
Yeah, well, I heard him speaking with the Australian accent, and I was like, that's a really bad Australian accent. Then I was like, wait, what if he is Australian? So I wanted to double check that he wasn't actually Australian and just from some really rare part of Australia that I hadn't heard of before I started dissecting his accent.
Yeah, really weird mistake. But these dumb Aussies, well, the main guy's not an Aussie. They make a mistake to trust him. As soon as they give him a pistol, dead.
Bam, bam, bam.
And then he shoots Quentin. Shoots Tarantino with the dynamite, boom, blows up.
Yeah, great scene.
All right, so one thing I did look up, and I didn't know this, because I was like, wait, dynamite? I don't ever remember hearing about dynamite in the Civil War, and apparently it was invented like in 1867. So it's just a little bit afterwards. It did not exist before the Civil War.
Oh, okay. Maybe they made it up. These Australian people brought it over.
There you go. I think it was a Swedish person that actually might have invented it. So Mabes. Totes Mabes.
Maybe. That's what we'll run with.
Yep. All right. So he goes back to Candyland and we get the final shootout.
Yes. And the best one is we've obviously seen very over the top blood splatters from guns and people being shot. And the best one is where he shoots Candyman's sister and she just flies back out of the room.
See, it's funny because I'm glad you brought that up because I really don't have any more notes for here because I was again on my like fifth mile. But sure. I saw some people had a problem with that.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, I was in the theater and people started laughing when she was shot. And I'm like, you really had a problem with the only woman being shot? And again, I understand Tarantino has a history, a problematic, potentially some, but somebody problematic of like violence towards women, which I do think a lot of people in movies do have that. I'm not saying it's not. Here in International Women's Month or whatever it is in that sense. Okay. But I had a problem with it in the sense of one, it's played for laughs, which again is like, okay. But you've shown all these other people, they get shot and it explodes.
Yeah.
And so with the woman, he actually did go woke. Tarantino went woke here because she gets hit. There's no blood. There's no violence.
She flies backwards.
He gets yanked off screen like it's Showtime at the Apollo and she's bombing.
Yep. I just find it so stupid because this is peak Django cockiness where he says to the two black women that he's trying to escort out of the room, he says, say goodbye to Laura or whatever her name was. Yeah. And they say, goodbye, Miss Laura. And then she's bang. And you're right. It's like she's been hoisted off.
She's been
of
yanked, pulled off screen.
And it's so absurd that I just bust out laughing. It was like, that's so stupid.
And it's supposed to be. And so like the one crit, it was a critic that said that. And I'm just like, so no women, because women were fucking complicit. She was complicit in this.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
yeah.
She was the sister. She was benefiting from all this fucking slave labor and everything like that.
Exactly. Just because she's not doing it doesn't mean she's not benefiting and, you know, sitting idly by.
Yeah. And I do think, and again, here comes incel Brett coming out here as I use that. But with something like this, it's like, these are bad people. Women can be fucking bad. It's what drives me crazy with the girl bossing thing. When it's just like, oh, something like Kamala Harris, our vice president. And they're like, oh, look at her doing all this. I'm like, she's still doing all these fucking war crimes that everybody else is doing. She's still complicit in this as a vice president. So like if Hillary Clinton would have been president, would we have been, oh yeah, she's girl boss droning all these other fucking people. And it's like, this is where this identity politics thing come in, when it's just like, I understand like the violence against women. If you don't want to see it, like being done to Kerry Washington in that sense.
Right.
It was done to the men too. It's not purposely doing it. Speaking of The Witcher 3 real quick, I understand the problem with Horson Jr. when they go in and all the sex workers and all that were all tied up and doing. I understand that now. When I first saw it, I was just like, oh, I'm going to get him for doing it. Now I see the problem with something like that. But
even
with this,
this
is a fucking woman with power, all right? She has as much power as anybody, literally not named Calvin, okay?
Yeah.
She can fucking be shot just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. She would have been like way more interesting character as well if they had leaned her into being bad as well. Some of our 100%. Favorite characters are bad women. We love bad women characters.
She did nothing. Her character was pretty much meaningless. It really was.
There was not much point in her being there.
Tarantino women, you know, like, well, watch.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. I thought he did great, though, with Shoshana in Glorious Bastards, though, as a lead. Okay. I thought she was great.
I don't remember.
Yeah. All right. So for the most part here, it gets to the end. When we talked about how Calvin didn't get his goodbye because he wasn't the real villain. Maybe that's why Steven, who again is the real villain, actually gets a goodbye. He gets kneecapped. Funny line. Got all these punishments here. About kneecapping. What's that? Boom. Bam. Shoots him in the knee. He gets the thing. Is he just yelling at him? You son of a bitch. Oh, Candyland can't go. Shoots the dynamite. And then we get this victory dance from Django's horse as he's doing this little dressing, little
doing
like
spinning.
Is he like, is he sea walking here? Is he crip walking? Is it a horse
I think
crip,
he is crip walking?
Walking?
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I see this horse doing it. I'm like, is he sea walking?
Mm-hmm. He does some donuts first and then crip walking.
Yeah. We get Django doing like a freeze frame where he's got he does the smile at the angle. He's got the sunglasses at night, by the way.
Yeah, because he's too cool.
And he's got the cigarette coming out, and I'm like, God damn, Jamie Foxx, he's too fucking cool.
He's so fucking cool. And I just remember, he's been in quite a few films we've talked about. One that he was so cool, Baby Driver.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So cool in Baby Driver. Loved him in that. I haven't seen Dreamgirls, but he's in that, and I would love to watch him in that with Beyonce.
Yeah, yeah. He's also very good when he's very young in The Great White Hype. It's Samuel L. Jackson is in it. If we ever do like a sports month, we got to do that movie. It's one of my fucking favorite movies. Like a 1996 satire of like boxing and all that. It's so goddamn funny. Jeff Goldblum in it. Yeah. Damon Wayans plays the boxer. So good. Peter Berg. What the fuck did we talk about that he did? Did he direct Two Guns?
Possibly.
Possibly. I don't know. He's a big time director now, but he plays the Irish Terry Conklin, who's not Irish, but he's white. And so he has to fight the black guy. So all the racist people will bet on him.
I see. Okay.
Irish Terry Conklin. And he goes, I'm not even Irish. And like, but you're white. He's like, what the fuck? But you're white there for all the white race. God damn that movie. God, that movie's so good. Okay. I think that's it. We got everything. Got anything else?
I think that's it from me.
Okay. That is Django 2012. All right. Let's get to the tier list rankings. S at the top, A, B, C, D. And I don't think we're going to need the V tier, the Valentine's tier today.
Oh, speaking of Jamie Foxx films, Valentine's Day.
You're right. Fuck me. Man, we have done a bunch that he's in. I don't think this will be it. Okay.
No.
So I am on the cusp of two letters, okay?
Sam.
Are you really?
Mm.
Okay, well, I'm going to put you on the spot first, since you've seen this movie before and you have it in. All right, so what are you going to put it? Or where are you going to put it?
I'm straddling S and A.
Okay, me too. We can talk it out. We can talk it out. Okay.
Yeah. I think it absolutely is a must watch. But it depends. What we said earlier, I'm not going to sit down and watch this again tomorrow. I think it's like a one and done. Enjoy it for what it is. And just bask in all the amazing cast and visuals and music and sound, and just take it all in and enjoy it, and then you don't have to watch it again. 3-hour film nearly, so it's not going to be you're not going to chuck this on a Sunday and just casually watch it.
See, I agree with you, but at the same time, I don't, unless we're judging this solely on rewatching a movie we will never talk about because I will never watch it again, but I will recommend to every single person. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen is Uncut Gems.
Okay.
I would never rewatch that, but that is an S tier through and through because it is an experience like no other. It is a 2-hour panic attack. Now, people are like, why would I want to watch a 2-hour panic attack? Because I've never seen a movie like that. But it has you on edge, because the whole point of suspense is you have to get suspenseful and then let it down and then build you back. The tension has to be there. It's fucking 2 hours of tension. Okay.
Oh my God.
So I would give that an S, but I would never fucking watch it again, you know?
Okay.
And so with this, like you said, I do think it's important in the sense of it gets across the brutality of slavery. It is not a documentary, but that's the great thing about Tarantino is he didn't put the KKK in there. He put these people who were adjacent to it. He didn't put an actual notorious plantation owner or slaver. He fictionalized it, okay? That's the difference in this and Forrest Gump. I fucking hate Forrest Gump because it puts actual people that existed. Holy shit, please tell me you saw the Martin Luther King scene that was linked in Discord.
Oh, no, I didn't watch it.
That scene was actually filmed, okay?
Okay, I need to go
watch
that.
I was screaming in my classroom, fucking howling. I'm telling you, it is so fucking offensive that was filmed. Thank God they cut it out. That's the difference in there. Forrest Gump was trying to be real and took real life and real people and trivialized legit things. This doesn't do it. This is his own fucking thing. It's historical fiction, and I can take it as that. So with that, I am actually going to put this in an S tier
Yeah.
Because it's fucking amazing, man. It's fucking Tarantino, Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz. Like, even though I said he did the same thing as Hans Landa, I'll watch that shit
still
again.
Good.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So S tier for me.
Double S.
Okay. In there. Okay, so we have two reviews here. All right, you want to take the first one? Two listener reviews.
Yeah, I'll
sent
take the
in.
First one.
Okay.
Yeah, so the first one's from Tier. And yeah, he says, one of the best movies that most of the audience can't quote in public.
There you go. In public.
In public.
Yeah,
so
wait,
Tier,
are you in
Tier?
Tier, are you in private quoting? I don't say it in private, but maybe. That's just me. No, we did. I'm not even going to joke about that. Okay. All right. Next one again. Previously mentioned, who sent in the question? Lawrence. Mm. Django masterfully encapsulates an ancestral power fantasy with its thrilling highs and comedic moments. Yet its association with Tarantino slightly complicates its reception, brilliantly portraying the spectrum of emotions from having a relentless pursuit when one has nothing left to lose. And that's pretty much what it was. So much of it was. It was a man with nothing to lose. He didn't give a shit. But then by the end, he gained everything.
Love that.
There
what
you
a
go.
Good
All
synopsis.
Right. So thanks, boys, for sending that in. Anybody else, whatever movie we do, which we're about to announce, make sure to email that to us. I know that we had it. Someone sent in the Discord DM. From now on, just email it to us so we can have it all right there in order.
Yeah.
And when I say we, I mean I. Don't forget about it in my DM. So again, send that email as podonthepath@gmail.com. Again, questions, suggestions, comments, especially the reviews of the movie we're about to announce. Patreon.com/onthepath. We did American Beauty, long episode, pushed 2 hours. Yeah, good talk in there as well. Like it always is. Come on. A bunch of stuff in there. Helps us keep the lights on, pay for the Zoom and all that fun stuff in there. So we appreciate all our patrons that do that. Check out the Discord, all the socials, and again, rates and review below. Lucy, where can we find you?
You will find me at Lucy J. Robin all over the internet.
All right. And you can find me on Discord because I have no public socials. Next week, Oscar month rolls on with the movie that I mentioned that got me into medieval history. We are talking about the best winner picture. We did 94 with Pulp Fiction. We did on Patreon American Beauty, 99. We are doing 1995's Braveheart.
Yep, first watch for me.
It's going to be a first watch for you. It's 2 hours and 50 minutes. God, who keeps picking?
Why are all these Oscar winners so long?
Who keeps picking these movies? But no, this will be fun because this is going to be history. What am I trying to say? History heavy. Because like I said, I watched this like, holy shit, I looked into it. This is probably the most ahistorical movie outside of maybe Mel Gibson's The Patriot I think that was 2000, might have been 99. It's historically just absolute fucking dreck, but I remember it being a good movie, and I will judge it on both. I will judge it as a good movie. Gladiator's another one too. It's terrible history, but it's a great movie. So we will see, and we will talk about Mel Gibson, noted racist in that sense, but he got a good comeback. So we will have Lucy reenact Mel Gibson's voice recordings.
Which voice recordings?
The one where he says in yeah, it's very anti-Semitic, very racist. We will not have to do that. No, that's what I'm saying, be in there.
We'll just play the clip at the start of the podcast.
No, I don't even we'll do that. We will comment on it in a comedic fashion. All right, so until next week with Braveheart. Bye.
See ya.